Hi, I'm Zach. I'm an alcoholic.
Zach. All
right, I have no idea what I'm going to say yet, so bear with me. Also, I'm going to be talking a little bit about drugs, so if that bothers you, call your sponsor, pray about it, you know. acceptance is the answer. And I'll try to keep it as clean as I can. I have a hard time with cussing a lot. The only person I think cusses more than me is that guy John right there, so. All right, I'm one of those people that I was definitely an alcoholic before I started drinking. I had all the isms that you have. You know, I was did not like myself. Always felt out of place. You know, growing up, I was grew up in this really poor family. I didn't really know I was poor until I got into school, you know, I was always in shabby clothes and, you know, whatever, stuff like that. And I always just kind of felt out of place and awkward and weird. Looking back at it, you know, I always felt like I couldn't make friends or whatever. But, like, now, looking back, like, I actually made friends a lot and was nice to people and happy-ish. you know, at the time, though, I always just felt weird and not normal. I was always the short kid in class. I was, you know, the poor kid, and I always got made fun of for that. Yeah, you know how it is. You know, growing up, my dad was he was an alcoholic. I know we don't like to label people, but he was a dry drunk. He never went to AA. He never did any of that stuff. He just stopped drinking sometime before I was born, he was an asshole. He was a really deep down angry person, and that came out a lot. And you know, we never really had people over. Friends wouldn't come over. When I was younger, you know, I would go over to people's houses sometimes, stuff like that. But you know, in our neighborhood, you know, everybody knew him as the angry dad, and nobody wanted to come over. Later on in life, that would turn into, you know, in high school and stuff like that. Like, I never had friends come over, you know. I didn't really, you know, I didn't want them to see that. He didn't want them over, stuff like that. I also never really had, like, a relationship with him. I mean, there's a lot of people, I mean, even in this room, I haven't been here very long, there's a lot of people in this room that I've had more conversations with than my dad. And, you know, when I was younger, that really made me feel out of place, too, because there was a lot of people that were, you know, they learned stuff from their dad, and they would go on family trips and do all that sort of family stuff, you know, and we didn't really have that, you know, so it was like this progression of, you know, when I was growing up, like, I just didn't feel normal anyways, and then circumstantial things, you know, made me feel even more out of place and more awkward. And, you know, by the time I took my first drink, which I'm surprised I made it as long as I did, I made it till I was 17. It was my senior year in high school. And, Halloween night. And I went out with some people, went to this party. I drank a lot more than people that were drinking for a fair amount of time already. I blacked out, smoked a bunch of weed that night too for the first time, and, you know, I didn't make a fool out of myself, I didn't puke all over the place, I didn't, like, do any of those things. I mean, we were driving around, throwing candy at kids out this van and, like, all some other stupid stuff, but I personally didn't make a fool out of myself like I would later on, you know, and but I blacked out, and, like, I had fun for a little while, and then I lost myself, and that was, like, I found it, you know, that was my answer. That right there was my solution to my problem, because my problem was being me. I hated being me. I hated how I felt. I hated everybody else around me, pretty much. You know, I just kind of acted like I didn't, because maybe I'd be able to fit in somewhere. And that was my solution, though. You know, I had found... found it. And I went from, that was my senior year. I didn't graduate. I was like 2 credits shy of graduating. I didn't graduate, and within a year, I was, probably within 2 or 3 months, I was to, you know, I would drink a fifth at a time. I was every weekend at least. You know, it obviously within a few months, it was pretty much one of the primary things I was trying to do. Within a year, I was selling meth and getting high and just doing all sorts of other crazy stuff. And, you know, it's looking back, once I got sober, looking back, my pattern was, even before I started drinking, I would find some friends that I kind of felt like I could hang out with. I could pretend to be what they were. And then once that kind of fell apart, and once I felt awkward enough, maybe once I did something stupid, I would switch friends and kind of move on. And that's kind of the way it went for my drinking and using too. I started doing meth a lot. I stopped talking to people that I was hanging around, because obviously that's not a thing you really do socially. You know, you can't really do meth on the weekends or anything like that. You know, you just do it, and you do a lot of it, and that's what I did. And I got involved with a lot of bad people, some biker gang, Gypsy Joker people, and some cooks. And you know, I stopped calling anybody. There was a while there my mom thought I was dead, because you know, she hadn't heard from me, or anybody that I knew, anybody that she knew, hadn't heard from me, seen me in like a year. And she kind of knew what I was getting into when I started doing it. And that was something I carried around for a long time. You know, I felt really bad about that, because at the time I was doing it, I was like, well, I'm just, you know, I'm going to save them the trouble, and I'm just going to go do my own shit over here. And you know, just hearing from me, my mom said it would have been nice to know that I was alive. She would call hospitals and jails and look on the internet and stuff like that, see if I'd been arrested. You know, she grew up a lot of alcoholics and drug addicts, and you know, like, her dad tried to kill her one time because he was drunk and in a rage. So she knows all about that sort of stuff. And you know, so I mean, my uncle was on like the first season of Cops, so you know, there's been a lot of that in my family. And so, you know, she worried a lot about me and what happened to me. You know, there was even people that I ran into, because I got really bad into that. There was some people trying to kill me right when I was starting to get out of it. A lot of people were getting arrested. People were dying. Stuff like that. And somebody really, really wanted to kill me and tied some people up I knew. So I was like, okay, I gotta like not do this anymore. Like, it's consequences are getting too bad. Things are gonna go really south really fast. And you know, since I kept those two things separate, I went and stayed with my parents again for a little while, and that was it was nice for my mom, I guess. When I quit that, though, I think I was like 115 pounds. You know, I was only sleeping maybe once a week, not eating, you know, stuff like that. And it was bad. But I just quit it, right? I just quit and started drinking more again, doing other stuff, and started to kind of feel normal. And then, you know, it got back into, well, there's some other drugs I'm going to do. I'll start doing a bunch of coke because I like that, and I'm going to sell some of that. And, you know, because I always got to make money so I can drink for free and get high for free. And, you know, and then I did that for a little while, ripped off some people. You know, it's always consequences, making an ass out of myself, stuff like that. And, you know, that had to change. So I quit doing that, for the most part. And, I think that's when I got my DUI. I got my DUI. I was in a blackout. I was doing like 95 down McLaughlin. It's in Portland, and running red lights and stuff like that is not good at all. Cops, I kind of remember the cops getting behind me and the lights coming on, and then I remember downshifting and speeding up, and you know, I almost got away from them, almost. I was jumping my car and stuff like that, and my tire popped off its bead, and I slid into the bushes, and you know, all that fun stuff. They beat me up a little bit, you know, I remember being in the back of the cop car and just really mad at everybody. And so, you know, what I was going to do is I'm going to make myself throw up all over the back of your cop car because fuck you, you know. And so I did, you know. And then they hosed me off later on. And it was, you know, what I showed them. And, you know, at that point, you know, they, you know, I knew I had a problem. My problem was that I always like made mistakes, and that I, you know, I got too drunk, and I was just acted stupid, right? And my problem wasn't that I drank too much; it was just that like, and the alcohol wasn't the problem. It was just I just needed to like focus it a little bit better and have fun, like I used to, and. But they thought I should go to AA and go to diversion and stuff like that. So I was on probation for a couple years because of felony eluding. And that was part of my stipulation. And, you know, while being on probation, you're not supposed to drink. And, you know, I would do that for a little while. But I would always get caught drinking. You know, I was going to diversion for a while, and I would take UAs on, like, I don't know, Tuesday or something like that, or Thursday or whatever. So the day I took a UA, I could drink because I wouldn't have another UA for like 4 or 5 days. So I could drink that day, and, you know, I would. And every few months, you know, something would happen, and I would get caught, and I would, I spent like 4 months in work release. I spent a couple weeks in jail here, a couple weeks in jail there, all the while, I just got to figure out how I'm gonna be able to drink and not get caught, and that was always the thing. It wasn't I don't need to stop drinking. I just need to not get caught drinking, you know. So I think the 4 months that I was in work release, because I was on probation for 2 years, and the 4 months I was in work release, I think that was probably the longest I actually had sober. The last year that I was, because I had been caught quite a few times, and they were like, well, we're just going to lock you up for a long time if you don't stop, you know. And and I was in diversion. I had to take UAs like, I don't know, 2 or 3 times a week. So I'm just going to eat a bunch of shrooms all the time because those don't show up in UAs. So I did that for a long time, for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months at least straight, that I was eating those all week long. I finally got off probation, and I was pretty much blackout drunk for the next year, I would say. I don't really remember much of it. I know I somewhat kept a job, just barely. I don't even really remember exactly where I was living at the time. There was a few different places, stuff like that, and all I really remember was like getting up hungover for work. Sometimes, most of the time still drunk. Sometimes just not waking up at all. Or I'd wake up in just weird places, in bushes somewhere. I woke up in the next state over, in somebody's car, a few days after I started drinking. You know, just, I've woken up on the max, just talking to people. I mean, one time I woke up like a block or two away from where I grew up, and I wandered around for like 2 hours not knowing where I was, because I was still just that messed up. And that was, that was not a good time. And, you know, by that point, it was You know, I had been to AA a couple times. I went like 3 or 4 times, and I really just did not like anybody there, you know? They were happy. They were okay with their lives. There was one meeting I went into, nobody said anything to me, so I was just like, well, screw you guys too. So I just started, I signed all my own court slips so I could get done with diversion, you know, because I'm going to beat this thing, you know. My whole thing was just, I just got to get off. I don't really care. I don't need your help. Like, I can do this myself. If I wanted to quit, I would quit, you know, but I didn't want to because I was going to figure it out. And, you know, so, but after that year of blackout drinking and all that stuff, I was like, well, okay, maybe I need to calm down on this a little bit. I finally lost my job. I think that was 2008 when the economy went to shit. And so I was drunk and I broke my hand on something. So they laid me off. Luckily, they didn't just fire me because I'd been missing so much work. But they laid me off. You know, that kind of slowed me down a little bit because I didn't quite have the decent job to pay for stuff. I was still selling drugs and doing that sort of stuff so I could, you know, get away with drinking most of the time when I wanted to. But that kind of made me look at things a little bit different, you know, where, well, maybe I should pump the brakes a little bit. And that didn't really last too long. I got into, like, doing a bunch of pills and because the roommate I was living with at the time had broken his neck in a drunken car accident. And so he got plenty of pills for a while, and then, you know, those stopped happening, so we had to start doing heroin and stuff. All the while, there was a while there where I didn't drink for like a year almost. I drank like twice in a year. But I was smoking a lot of weed and doing a lot of heroin and doing coke sometimes and, like, you know, just kind of doing anything to change myself, you know, because it was like, well, if I drink, I black out and then I do stupid stuff. This other stuff, you know, I'm all right, pretty much, you know. I most of the time can remember what I'm doing or what I've done. But all the while I'm... you know, I've kind of only lived in this, like, 10-mile radius. I don't really go too far out of that. You know, I start talking to less and less people because of the things that I do and the places that I go. You know, bars that I go into, I get in fights with people. I can't go back there. You know, I rip that person off and they hang out there a lot, so I won't go back there. I start talking to less and less people. And I had a phone full of numbers, but I didn't talk to any of those people. I didn't even know half of them, but I didn't erase any of them because I didn't want to feel like such a loser, you know, like, I wanted to feel like I knew people, but I just was so alone all the time. Even when I was with people, I just felt alone all the time, and that I hated everybody, and I hated myself especially, for a lot of the shit that I had done, because there was a lot of messed up stuff that I did, when I was doing the stuff that I was doing, you know. And, you know, it got to the end of that year of not drinking, and my work called me back, and they're like, well, we're starting to hire again, we want to hire you back, and you need to come take UA for us. And I was like, phew, I don't know about all that, but... So I drank some bleach and took some other stuff to try to clean my system out. And I almost did it, but not quite. And so I got on this thing where I have to take every random UA. They'll hire me back, but I have to take every random UA that they give. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll just start drinking again, right? That doesn't show up in UAs. So that's what I did. I was going to really try to control it this time, which I was, like, somewhat successful at, I guess. You know, you know, I could go a few months and just drink like 6-pack to a 12-pack, you know, at night. Or we drink a lot of microbrews up there, you know. I could just drink that and all the while, it's like, you know, it's that white knuckling it. Like, I really just want to go out and get wasted. Like, I just want to black out and not be me right now. But I'm not going to. And so, you know, every, I don't know, month or two, there would be that black. Well, that's not enough. I'd go to the bar and, you know, wake up somewhere weird and fail a UA. And for some reason, they didn't fire me. And, like, later on, after I got, because I worked for the company later on after I got sober, too, and there was a lady in there that she was pretty much, her and my boss at the time, he was a recovering alcoholic. He had, like, 25 years. They were the only reason I had my job. Because they kind of knew some of the stuff that I had used to do, and because I had talked to them and stuff, and they kind of knew, like, if I had lost that job, I think that, and, you know, I knew it too, I would just go back to, you know, I'd just go get a bunch of drugs and a gun and go do the stuff I was doing before, because that's all I knew how to do, you know, so I was barely hanging on to that job, and all this time, I didn't have my license, because I lost it when it was my DUI and stuff like that. So that was like 7 years I didn't have my license. I was driving illegally sometimes. I finally got my license back. I had moved out of my mom's again, and I was living with one of my buddies. We had gotten a house, and then he moved to California, and you know, it was one of those nights where I was like, well, I was kind of, I had been maintaining, kind of, I was right about ready to lose that job. I had just gotten my license back. I think I had it 3 weeks, maybe a month, and, you know, I was never going to drink and drive again. I'm never going to drink again. I'm just not going to drink and drive, you know, now that I actually have my license back, because I did it all the time when I didn't have my license. You know, people, we'd go out and, man, I'm too drunk to drive. Well, I'm fine, dude. I'm better when I'm drunk, you know. It's fine. You're too high to drive? That's fine. I'm good, you know. And I drove all the time like that. And but now that I had my license back, you know, I was better not do that. Well, I was taking my buddy back to the bar, and or down to the bar where his girlfriend worked, and I was just going to have a drink, one drink. He'll buy it for me because I took bomb down there. Just have this one, right? And I remember having that one. I remember having, I think, a couple more. And then I remember stopping at another bar on my way home that I used to hang out a lot at, and because they made the waitress made really, really, or the bartender made really good drinks for me, so, you know, why not? And the next thing I knew, I wake up, you know, way out in the middle of nowhere, slid off the road somewhere in my car, and like, for some reason, that morning, looking back at it now, I know it was my higher power, but, like, for some reason, like, I knew I had to stop drinking, or I was gonna, like, I could see it, I was gonna die. Like, I was gonna die. That's what's gonna happen, and it's not gonna take very long, you know, because I was on that last chance at work, and I knew what I was gonna do if I lost that job, you know, and that wasn't going to take very long. And with the things that I was doing and the people that I would be getting involved with again, like, you know, I wouldn't make it more than a year or two, either without dying from them or killing myself. Like, that was just what was going to happen. And, you know, so for some reason that morning, though, it was just like, well, you got to quit drinking. Like, this is going to kill you. And I had never really had that thought before. I always was like, well, what am I going to do different next time? How am I going to manage this a little bit better next time? You know, maybe I should eat a little bit more, or maybe I should, you know, not drink Long Island iced teas, or what, I don't know, whatever it was. And for some reason that morning, that was my thought. So I called my boss up, and I was like, look, this is what's going on right now. I was weirdly, I was like down the street from his house, and he lived, I don't know, way out there. And so he came and followed me home because I was still wasted, and I was like, I'll be in a couple days, you know. And it was cool with that, and that was awesome. So I was just gonna stop drinking because, you know, the AA people, they were all happy and cheery, and fuck that right now, you know. I don't need that. I can do this myself. I've quit all. It was like, you know, in my mind, I was like, well, I've quit this. I've quit that. I've quit this other thing. I had like free mental health stuff through my work, so I was like, well, I'll just see a counselor, and I'll stop drinking. And I did that, right? I called up this lady, and I started seeing her. I think I was seeing her twice a week, and I just didn't drink. And that was fucking horrible. That was horrible. I was about 9 months sober when I actually came into AA, and that was like the worst 9 months of my life almost. All I was stuck with was me. You know, at that point, you know, there was maybe two people that would answer a phone call from me. You know, my mom was gone. You know, I went to work. I was really angry, pissed off all the time. And then I went home and I just like stewed in my shit. And I went and saw my counselor every once in a while. And, you know, I wanted to drink so bad, but I, like, for some reason that stuck in my mind that you will die. Like, you will die. And, luckily the counselor I was seeing at the time, she was, I think, 22 years sober, when I started seeing her. She's, and she was, you know, she was going through the steps with me, and I didn't even know it. And, you know, that really saved my life. You know, that's kind of when all my shit started catching up with me, too. You know, back taxes that I hadn't paid and bills and this and that. So I was getting desperate for money. So there at the, like, I owed her some money. And she was like, well, so if you go to an AA meeting, I'll take $10 off your bill, you know. And I was like, well, okay, I think I can do that, all right. And so I don't remember how much money I owed her. Well, I was like, well, it's not just once a week. If I go to like five a week, you'll take off $50. She's like, yeah. I'm like, all right, I think I can do this, you know. And so that's what I did. You know, I started that, and we had kind of talked about some of the stuff and going to AA, maybe that might be a good idea and stuff like that. And you know, so I kind of went around to different meetings. There were some of them that I really didn't like. There were some of them that were okay. I luckily landed in this one. I think she had maybe suggested, 'cause her husband's in AA too. This men's meeting, and I walked in there, and like for the first time, there were three or four older guys. There was one of them that was like 80, man. He was old. He was a really, really great guy. I knew him till he died. He was a really awesome guy. But for the first time, like, I walked in there, I was early, and they asked me, "How are you doing? How are you? What's up with you? What's going on?" You know, and you could see it in their eyes that they actually cared, you know, and I felt that they cared. And it was like a weird, weird feeling, just like for somebody to care about me. Like, I hadn't had that in a long, long time. And if I had had it, you know, I was so jaded by everything that was going on that I couldn't see it. You know, and so I kept going back to that meeting. You know, I went there every week. I got a service commitment. They suggested a few other meetings. some of the guys in there did. There was one meeting I went to that that the only reason I went because I heard there was a fight there, and I was like, well, there's like an actual fight, like chairs were getting thrown and stuff like that. I'm like, I'm gonna go check that one out because that sounds fun. You know, there might be some angry people like me there. And so you know, I went, and that actually there for a while. That was my home group. A couple years later, it turned into my home group. There weren't any angry people there. They left after the fight, I guess. So, but you know, I was like, when I got here, I was like more in debt than I knew about. Like, I thought I was like $10,000, and I was like $20,000 or $25,000 in debt. But so I was working all the time and like paying off this stuff and whatever else, and I didn't really like have time for AA, and which was, looking back on it, which was really, really stupid. You know, I slowly got involved and I slowly started doing more stuff. You know, I secretaried that meeting, the men's meeting, for I think a year and a half or something like that. While I started going to other meetings, started getting involved there, I started making coffee at one meeting. I don't know, my first sponsor, he started having me pick people up that didn't have cars, give them rides places, you know, so that was my service commitment when I didn't have one, because I actually had a car. It was a real piece of crap, but it, you know, got me around. And you know, slowly and slowly I started getting it more and more involved. And by about, I don't know, I think I was like two and a half years sober, something like that. And I was going to probably at least 7 meetings a week, probably more, 7 or 8, 9, I don't know, something like that. I had like 6 or 7 service commitments like that I had to do. And you know, I was actually happy. You know, it was weird and uncomfortable, kind of. I don't know what it was, because I had never actually really been happy, you know, that I could ever remember before that in my life. You know, I was always really pessimistic. Even if I didn't say I was, in my head, I was always, well, something's going to go wrong. You know, I was actually happy. I had my first sponsor. We talked for, he wasn't at the first men's meeting I went to, the second one that I went back to, and we talked for like 2 hours afterwards, and his story was a lot like mine. And you know, that dude, I learned a lot from him. One thing though that he would always tell me, man, I would call him up with something and we'd figure something out, and then he'd always tell me, more will be revealed. And I'm just like, God, dude, shut up with that. And more, yeah, I got it, man. Or he'd ask me if I prayed about it. And yeah, that just really bugged the crap out of me at the beginning, man. But, you know, at the beginning, he would invite me over to his house. I did some work around there for him. He'd pay me for it, which was cool. But, like, you know, I'd sit down and have dinner with him and his family and be around some normal people and do some normal, like, family stuff that, like, I never did as a kid or whatever. And, you know, it was like learning how to be a normal person in society, you know. You know, like in the book says, you know, the life we lead was we thought was the only normal one. And, you know, that to me, like, all this crazy stuff that I was doing and the fucked up people that I was hanging out with, that was normal. You know, and this was like the weird thing, you know, to be able to like pay bills and sit down and have a family meal and talk about how your day went and actually care about the next person and be nice to people. I don't know. I was just a really mean, angry person. Like to fight a lot and stuff like that. And so just like learning how to be normal with this person and see how he interacted with his family was, you know, was awesome. And I learned a lot about it. He knew how angry I was and how pessimistic I was. So every day he'd have me write a gratitude list out. And I had to, at the end of every night, I had to write a gratitude list out, and the next morning I'd call him and tell him what was on it. It better, you know, be something different. It can't be the same thing every day. There might be some of the same things on there every day, but it can't be a whole list, can't be the same. And I did that for, I don't know, a while, a year, something like that. And, you know, it was just really teaching me how to look for the things that are good in life and the things to be grateful for, even when shit's going real sideways. Because there was some stuff that I had to deal with in that first year that was really, really hard. I thought I had a daughter with somebody, and it turned out not to be mine, but at the time I didn't really care. But then mom went back out and took her with her and all that stuff, and I couldn't really do anything about it. And it was like, dude, it was like really, really hard. I cried a lot, and that was like the first time I had actually cried, especially with somebody or else around, and I don't know, ever. It was, you know, it really, like, it destroyed part of my heart. And you know, somebody was there to go through that with me, and that was different. It was weird. It was, you know, to have somebody actually care and love about me. And you know, that kind of got me into that helped me get more into service and more involved in giving back, I guess. I want to be there when somebody else needs that, you know, because if nobody else cares, at least somebody does. You know, that's all I needed at the time was just one person. I just need one person to care. And he showed me that. He showed me caring and love, and that was amazing. There's so much that I learned from him, and I don't even know if I can go into all of it. I don't even know if I really remember all of it, especially that first little while. But, you know, getting more and more involved in service work and, you know, actually starting to get sponsees, was weird. It was there's one sponsee that I had for a while that he's actually still sober now. He hasn't stayed sober the whole time, but that's all right. I've stayed sober the whole time, so I'm 100%. And it's just amazing to watch people grow and find out who they are. How long do I got to go for here? What? Keep going? All right. Okay. A couple years sober. There was a sober house that was like right down the street from my house, and so I started driving a lot of them. A lot of those were guys coming out of treatment, coming out of jail, stuff like that. Taking them to meetings. There's one guy, Jesse, that he's still sober, but he came. I saw him. I was speaking at a treatment center. He found out about this sober house or whatever, and he was a lot like me. He was very angry, very just not liking it, and not liking life at all. And he came into on the pretense that I'm going to do everything that is suggested of me, and it's not going to work. And I'm going to go back out, and I'm going to try it for a year. And it was amazing to watch him grow, because he actually, I didn't sponsor him, but I hung out with him a lot. Later on, he lived with me for a while. And, you know, that is, like, truly one of the most, like, one of the amazing, most amazing things, like, in this program. Not just him, but, like, just in general, is to see people come in here angry, hurt, broken, and just do some simple suggestions, get involved, and like actually see them be able to smile, you know, because I couldn't see that when I was doing it, you know, but I can watch it in somebody else. And, you know, I was it was probably a year and a half in, and I remember sitting around with some people talking and laughing, and my face hurt. And I was like, why the hell is my face hurt? And it was because I was smiling and laughing so much. And that hadn't been like that, you know, ever. At least not in a long, long time. I was about 2 years sober, so I got into a relationship with somebody, and which was really cool. We knew each other for a long time, for about a year or so. Got into a relationship, we got engaged, and like right around my birthday, she relapsed and just kind of shut me out and pushed everybody away, and it was like it was really hard, you know, because I finally, you know, I didn't date for whatever it was, 2 years, you know, and I finally, like, you know, thought this is gonna work out, and it didn't, so at the time I was like, well, okay, God, screw you. You know, like, screw you and your plan. Like, I've waited, I tried, I did all the right things, you know, and this is what I get, so, like, whatever. You know, like, I'm done with you, at least, you know, the time, that's what I was saying. And, so, you know, I did. I, like, stopped praying. I stopped, really doing any sort of spiritual program, whatsoever. You know, I didn't meditate, I didn't pray, I didn't whatever. Just didn't do any of that. I just went to meetings, helped out where I could, you know, told people that I prayed every time, all the time, and, you know, so I sounded good, but I didn't, you know, I wasn't doing it because, I was pissed off at him, you know, at what my idea of a higher power was at the time. You know, it was that idea that I had when I was a kid going to church that, you know, if you did the right things, you know, you got rewarded for them and good things happened. You know, that was kind of the idea still in my head. And obviously that is not the correct how it works. You know, like, shit just happens sometimes. You know, life happens. And by the time I couldn't really deal with it that well. And so there was a good, I don't know, year and a half, 2 years probably that, you know, I didn't pray at all. Like, I didn't even pray at the end of meetings. I was just like, you know, whatever. Like, you know, I can still sound good and whatever, but, you know, inside, slowly and slowly, that feeling of, being afraid of the world, all those nine-step promises that I had, you know, being able to look the world in the eye and all that stuff, like, all started coming, going backwards, you know. I had the fear of economic insecurity because sometimes when I felt like crap, I'd just go spend money on stupid shit that I didn't even need, you know, because I could, you know, because I had money at the time or whatever, and because this will make me feel better. And it never did, but I kept on doing it. You know, fear of people because, you know, I started lying again or lying by omission like I did before a lot. You know, not really about anything bad or big or anything like that, just a little stupid shit. And then, you know, all of those things, though, I started feeling worse about myself. I started, just everything started creeping up and creeping back to how I used to feel. And, you know, it kind of took a little while because I'm really stubborn, so maybe I just didn't, like, want to see what I was feeling. You know, it finally got to a point about a year ago now or so where, like, a drink wasn't, like, sounding good or whatever, but I just did not like my life. Like, and it was fine, you know. I had a really good job. I'd quit some jobs on, like, I gave them 2 week notice and, like, moved on and I got good, better job, and which is weird too. And you know, I had a place to live. I had friends, people that I could call whenever, and I just was starting to feel really, really empty inside. And it got to the point where I was like, dude, I need to do something or something. It was that feeling again, like, this is not going to turn out well. And so I heard somebody at a new meeting that I went to talk about how they just went through their fourth step and how they were feeling. And I was like, man, I want that right there. I want that again. I know what that feels like. I want that again. And so I got with him and we started the steps over again. And I think that was my third time through. And I found that second step, you know, I searched for a new meaning of my higher power, because the one, my concept of a higher power was not working. You know, the concept that I had was not working. You know, the way I see it now is, you know, life's like a mountain, right? And we're hiking up the mountain. He's got a map, and it's got like, oh, okay, that's a shit path right here. There's, you know, this one right here is pretty clear and pretty easy. And, you know, just all these other things, they all kind of go like this, and they all make it their way to the top, which is the end of my life. And if I'm talking to them, if I'm listening, you know, like, hey, go down this path. All right, cool. You know, and that'll work out better for you. It's not like, I don't just do good stuff and then good stuff happens to me. Like, life is going to happen no matter what. That path is there. I've got to walk it. I've got to get to the end. And as long as I'm in contact with my higher power, like, he's going to help me. He's going to guide me on the right path, because my path usually goes like way down over here off the side of the cliff, you know? He'll bring me through anything that faces me, you know. As long as I'm in contact with him, you know, I don't always get what I want, but I get what I need. My life isn't here to get what I want. It's here to get what I need. And, you know, sometimes what I need is a lot different than what I want. And most of the time what I want is stupid. So, you know, so as long as I get what I need, I'll be all right. And so far, you know, so far that has happened. And I just have to really, really remember that, you know, as long as I stay in contact, you know, I don't have to feel like that again. And there's still those days where, you know, there's some stuff going on right now. It's not super awesome, but, I mean, it's all right. It's all right. I'm not, you know, I've got a house. I've got a truck that I, like, have always wanted. I got friends. Got my best friend right there. And, you know, it's amazing. You know, back when I was drinking and using, I was in like a 10, 20 mile radius, maybe. Sometimes I'd leave to go get drugs other places, but I'd always come back, right back in there, you know. And now I'm like 3,000 miles away from my home, you know, where I grew up, you know, just because I could, you know. There wasn't any specific reason. It was just like, well, let's go try that out, you know, because I haven't done that. And the freedom of that is, I mean, it's still weird, I guess. There's a lot of things that are weird in my life, you know, new things, things that I never thought would happen. You know, when I was out there, I always thought I thought I'd be dead by 30. I mean, that was pushing it. Shit, I'm like 32 now, almost 33. So, you know, actually, like, saving money for retirement. What is that? You know. Like thinking about buying a house at some point, you know, just like worrying about my credit score, like, dude, that's not how I lived at all. You know, calling people up just to say hi and see how they're doing, You know, that's, it's not weird anymore, but that was a very weird and odd concept for me at the beginning. You know, the only time I ever called anybody was, you want to buy something or can I buy something from you? That was it. Or I need a car. Let me borrow your car for a couple hours. You know, it was always something. What can I get? Now it's like, how are you? People call me, how are you doing? It's just so different and so amazing. You know, now I travel for work all the time. So, I'm only here really on the weekends. So that's kind of odd too, because I've always worked in jobs where I'm like in a shop or something like that, where I'm same place, go in and out. So it's kind of weird now, not being as involved in like service work. Cause I really got involved in that. I was taking meetings in treatment centers, going to jails. I was on the intergroup board. I was like the secretary at some meetings. I did a bunch of that stuff where I was really involved, and now I'm like not really that involved, and it's kind of odd, because that was really like, I don't know, that was, especially when I didn't have any spiritual program going on, that was like what I relied on to get me through. It's like, well, at least I'm doing service work, right? And now it's like, well, I don't have friends around all week. Most of the times, there's some times where like I work till 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and I can't really find a meeting. Some places I'm at, there's like one meeting in town a night, and it's like 6 o'clock, you know, out in the middle of Texas places and stuff like that. So, I've really had to work on that spiritual program, and that's like constant contact with my higher power, because there's some times where I can't make it to meetings, and when I do make it to meetings, you know, I'm not around my friends. I don't have that time to like BS with them before and after the meetings. So it's a lot different, but you know, I've gotten to see a lot of things. I've gotten to go to a lot of meetings in a lot of different places, and you know, it's pretty awesome to be able to go to, you know, pretty much any state and like walk into a meeting, and at some point I'll feel at home. Sometimes I still feel weird. I walk into a meeting and I feel all uncomfortable and awkward, and you know, but you know, to be able to walk in, sit down, and know that these people understand me and they get me is really great. And I've gotten numbers at places, you know, that I know that I'm going to go back to, and you know, I'll call them up. Hey, I'm coming back next week. What's another? You want to meet me for a meeting? You want to meet for coffee beforehand? And they're like, yeah, come on by. You know, here, give me a call when you get into town or whatever. And you know, that the freedom to do that is just, it's really awesome. And to be able to, you know, see the world. I guess I haven't seen like the world. I've seen parts of America, I guess. But, you know, that wasn't anything on my agenda. I mean, shit, even last year. No, I didn't even know I was coming down here, really, till like 2 weeks before I left. You know, it was just like, I think it was like December, like, first week of December, I was like, well, I'll come down there, sure, you know. And then by like the 15th, I'd put money down on a place, and by like the 23rd, I was like, or the 26th, I was leaving to drive down here. So, you know, and so far, I've gone to a bunch of different states, a bunch of different meetings. You know, I've seen the Capitol. I've seen, you know, I saw the Grand Canyon a few weeks ago. I almost died there because I don't want to take suggestions still. And you know, I've seen some crap hole places of the country too, but. You know, we are everywhere, and that is awesome. And you know, go see places, I guess. You know, go to different meetings. I always find something to take away from pretty much every meeting that you go to. That's a new way to look at something. a new little saying that they've got going on in some part of the country that I've never heard before, or, you know, a different way of saying things that makes me think about it more. And so I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad you guys asked me to speak here tonight. Hope your expectations were low. And I guess with that, I'm going to keep coming back. Thanks. All right.